Hello, everyone, and welcome to Between the Pages, a podcast on books and sexuality hosted by yours truly, Caitlin Vacora.
Well, we are super excited to have Katie Kostick on the show with us today to talk about ACE for our February book club. Katie Kostick is a queer and ACE podcaster and actor living with mental illness. She is the creator of the Instagram Shelf Made Woman, podcast Shelf Made Woman, and co-host of the podcast Books and Boobs. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, Caitlin. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, so excited to have you. I am so excited for all of your many like podcast personalities. I love Books and Boobs and now I love Shelf Made Women. Yeah, I get to have you in my ears all the time. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you so much. It's such a joy to be a podcaster. I can't get enough of it, which is why I have two of them. I'm spoiled.
Never enough. Never.
Exactly. Wait for my third one. Just kidding.
Maybe. Oh my gosh. But like, what if you had a third one though?
But like, why not? Let's just do it.
Don't limit yourself. I love it. Well, we always start off with our classic question, which is, what is the worst sex advice or sex ed tidbit that you've ever received?
Yeah, so I've thought about this a lot because as an ACE person, like I have such an odd relationship to sex. And I think the worst advice or expectation that was ever put on me was to wait. And not even necessarily to wait till marriage, but just to like wait until whatever. Just put such a stigma on sex that like figuring out that I was ACE or figuring out my relationship to sex was just like put off for a really long time. And I had no one to talk to about it because all of the adults, instead of being like, okay, yeah, let's break down what's going on. How do you feel? They were all just like, no, that's bad.
Yeah, you have like a lot of internalized shame around all of that kind of narrative around sex and just kind of like the demonization of it. And also it puts a lot of pressure on you as a young person to be like, you have to wait until this perfect situation and, you know, like, what marriage sometimes, like depending on sort of what narrative you were told. That's a lot. That's a lot for someone to internalize.
It was. And then it was like, there was a point I couldn't figure out if the reason I was having issues with sex was because of the stigma or because of my, you know, Catholicism that I grew up, or because it was I was ACE, or if I had a medical issue. So it's like, there were just too many things. You're right. The stigma. Too much.
It's a lot. Yeah. And that's also part of, you know, what Angela Chen talks about in ACE, which I'm sure we'll get to once we get to like our book club. But that was something that I know Angela had to parse through herself. And then also it sounds like a lot of ACE folks are just kind of not sure of where their lack of sexual attraction comes from and what causes what. And there's just like, there's a lot of stuff to work through and a lot of nuance there. We just don't get taught, to your point.
Oh my gosh, yes. We'll definitely dig more into that, I'm sure.
Yay. I know, I'm excited. But first, I want to hear a little bit more about sort of who you are and what you do in this world.
Yeah, so I'm a podcaster and an actor, but really, I just see myself as like a young mid-20s trying to figure things out. I'm 100% in a quarter-life crisis. I am 100% mentally ill. I'm really struggling. And I think that's part of my identity. And I want it to be because I want to destigmatize not knowing, really trying to figure it out. And, you know, I went to theater school. And so I very much feel like an actor, forever an actor. I was a dancer for a long time. I'm a dancer forever. Right now I'm a podcaster. I'm a book content creator because why not? Yeah, so that's who I am. What I'm doing is right now surviving a pandemic, as we all are. Well, I have my Instagram, Shelf Made Woman, and that's kind of started this thing of, I don't know, just like a life of books. So I'm working on just being around books and loving books and reading books and thinking about them in different ways. We talked about Books and Boobs Pod. That's just me and my best friend being silly and talking about books. And then Shelf Made Women I created because I felt like Instagram just like the form of Instagram didn't have enough space to talk about books the way I want to talk about them.
I love that so much. And that is something that I was really drawn to with your account, Shelf Made Woman, which, you know, I started following pretty early in my Bookstagram journey. And I was always so struck by just your openness and honesty and vulnerability. And I can't get enough of that in general. Like, I just love when people are just like real, and it sounds so like basic, but that is just not the case, especially with Instagram being a highlight reel. You know, you get a lot of people's best faces, and I just so appreciated you kind of speaking truth to that and being like, hey, yeah, I'm not okay today. Today sucks. And my mental illness is really rearing its ugly head today. And it's been hard. And I think that there's a lot of freedom, to your point, and with you destigmatizing having those conversations, especially on a public Instagram platform. And I think that that's, yeah, it's super freeing. And I really just appreciate that on a personal level too.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I think I want to just mention that I think a lot of that comes from content warning for suicide and suicidal ideation, suicidal thoughts, everyone, if you have issues with that, I just want to give a heads up. But that comes from when I was 11, my brother died by suicide. And then I grew into mental illness and have that myself. And I don't want other people to have to deal with what I dealt with when my brother died. And so that's like my mission, and that's why I'm doing it. So thank you. Thanks for like being such a great support. The affirmation really does help me.
Oh, absolutely. No, truly. And thank you again. Like, that's just another example of your vulnerability and being willing to kind of share. And I really appreciate you like kind of sharing that space with me and sharing that journey. And I think that it's so powerful to have that be sort of like the underlying mission throughout everything that you do. And it's awesome now that you have another platform in Shelf Made Women, your podcast, to really kind of elevate those conversations and elevate that sharing to like that next level. To your point, like, you know, Instagram is a little bit more short form. And so like with podcasting, you really can kind of get into things and be able to have those super important conversations without sort of like a character limit or something like that.
Oh my gosh, exactly. And you hear tone, you can have conversations play off of each other. And oh my gosh, you can just have nuance that you can't have on Instagram. Exactly. You totally get it. You're a podcaster.
I know. I also can't shut up. So like, it's generally like, I appreciate a podcast because, and also it's my podcast. So I get to decide how much I talk.
Exactly. Some of my conversations or my thoughts, I'm like 15 minutes, and other times like it could be an hour and a half.
Totally.
Nightmares for me, but too fun. I can't stop.
Exactly. So we mentioned your Bookstagram, Shelf Made Woman. And I'm wondering, when did you actually like officially like join Bookstagram?
Yeah. So I looked back and it's January 2019, I started it. So it's about 2 years old. And I started it because I just wanted to read more. I was really into audiobooks, and there was a little bit of a stigma around it with people in my life. And they were like, wow, you should really read more. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll try to read more. And so I made a Bookstagram, and then it turned into this space of like, there's just a lot of queer people that I identified with. And then I felt like it was a platform for me to talk about mental illness. And I met a lot of people with disabilities that I related to, but I don't think I really like found a groove, not necessarily the groove, but like a groove until a year and 2 months into it. So like right when the pandemic started, that's mm-hmm. so funny. So right about then I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it better. That's when my Bookstagram like hit puberty and started to develop into something better. I had quit Bookstagram like 5 times before that and then just come back.
That's so funny that you started in January 2019, because that's actually like officially when I started my Bookstagram. So we were Bookstagram twins. Yeah. But I felt the same way, Rose. I want a place where I can like share my reviews, share my thoughts. And I was like already spamming my personal account. And so I was like, can I just silo it into like a book account? And I had followed a couple of indie bookstores and I was like, oh, there's a whole community. That's awesome. Yeah. It is funny though, hitting Bookstagram adolescence in a pandemic. It's almost like we're just forced to read more or forced to like turn inward more because there's just no other external stimuli happening. You're not leaving your house. And so literally what else is there to do other than like start to kind of create? And I'm wondering if you feel like having that time at home like influenced either your Bookstagram or your podcast or anything that you're doing.
Oh my gosh, definitely. I think Bookstagram was the community that I needed. I didn't have, I have a community, but it wasn't as interactive as Instagram is, right? Like a group text, but Instagram just felt like a little bit more present or stimulating. And during the beginning of the pandemic, and even now, I like really lack stimulation because I'm such an extrovert. I miss just like going to coffee shops and all these amazing things. And so for me, it was like, okay, I have all of this creative energy. I have all this talking I want to do. And that is kind of what Instagram was for me. And so I think you're onto something there. I think, well, I started Books and Boobs right at the beginning of the pandemic as well. It was planned before, but when Kelsey and I started it, we realized, wow, this is like a good thing to do on the weekends. And it's like the only thing we have scheduled, basically. So yeah, that was kind of something to like keep track of time. And then I think, again, I've just been so restless. That Shelf-Made Women was just like the next step in like, okay, what can I do to keep myself going right now, to give myself purpose? I feel so purposeless, especially I don't have jobs that I really love. They're kind of just there to make me money and give me insurance. It's all about what is keeping me going and giving me purpose. And like before, the city of Chicago could do it a little bit. But like now it can't. I think you're right. Like I think all of this stuff happened because of the pandemic.
It's amazing how even just having that like passion project can just ground you and like be able to sustain you, especially in a time where there's just not a lot to hold on to. And so it's so special that you get like this creative thing that you can kind of pour energy into and really kind of call it your own. And do you have like kind of a mission or something that you want the Shelf-Made Women podcast to accomplish?
Ooh, that's such a great question. There are so many things I want from it. And I have worked really hard on this like story sentence, as we would call it in like the theater world or the creative world, a story sentence. And that's Shelf-Made Women is an exploration of the intersection of people, literature, and society. It's a little bit less of like a goal I'm trying to meet and a little bit more of a space I'm creating to have these conversations. And my goal is just to really dive deeply into each month. Each month is kind of like its own package. You know, it's paired with a book and it's paired with a person and it always comes like really well together. I mean, I'm only on the second month, but so far it's like all coming really well together. And my goal is just to like thoroughly investigate as much as I can in each month with really thinking about those three things: people, books, society.
I love that. And I love that there's like a through line for each month, like in something that ties it all together. And I think that that creates a really like immersive experience for the listener, because then they get like the interview with the person, they get to like dive deep into the book. And so there's just so many ways to like access that like topic or like person or thing that you want to explore for that month. It's so cool.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been really fun. I've enjoyed it so far.
I have as well, as a listener. So I'm excited to see sort of like what you do in 2021 with it.
And yeah, I'll definitely me too.
Yeah, it is like, it's so funny. Like I think people think that there's like a lot more planned than is, at least on my end. I mean, I'm also like notoriously like a very like loose planner. I'm like, this is kind of fine. Like whatever. Sure. I think like people are like, oh, so who's coming on, you know, in the next couple of months. I was like, truly, we're working on like a couple weeks ahead of time and that's going to be fine.
Yeah, totally. Oh, totally. So for me, it's like half of my episodes are with people. So those I try to like book really far ahead. And then there's episodes with just me. And those ones I'm like night before, I'm like, okay, what have I been thinking about? How can I get this together? Like it has been stressful sometimes behind the scenes of podcasting. It has been stressful in some moments, but we're working through it and we're loving the product. So all is good.
Amazing. Well, before we dive into the book, I also wanted to ask if you have any anticipated reads for 2021 that you're looking forward to, since we're still sort of at the beginning of the year. Like, what's on your pre-order list?
I love looking at books that are like coming out, and I'm kind of terrible at keeping up with them once they actually come out, but I love like just knowing what's hot, right? And this book was not on any of the lists that I was looking at, but it was suggested to me in like a comment on my Instagram. And now I'm obsessed with it. It's called The Natural Mother of the Child by Chris Malcolm Belk. I think that's how you pronounce their name. It comes out in June. It's a memoir about his gestational parenthood. So the conceiving, birthing, and breastfeeding of his son, Samson, and how that experience helped clarify his gender identity as a non-binary transmasculine person. So I think, and I'm just assuming this because I haven't read the memoir yet, but I think the birth of his child was before he transitioned. And I think he was married to a woman. And so it's a queer relationship. It's about sexuality and gender. It's just about a lot of things that I'm really interested in. Plus it's a memoir, which is just like my jam. So I'm really pumped for that book.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. And I hadn't heard of it at all. Wow.
I know, isn't that cool? I always love when I haven't heard of a book. It's so great.
I literally just like opened up a tab and I'm like pre-ordering. Thank you.
Love it. Love it.
I love that. Any other like 2021 releases that are on your radar?
Oh, so many, like so many, but this is one that just came out that I'm really excited for. It's called We Play Ourselves by Jen Silverman. It just came out like a week ago, but it's written by a playwright. And I'm just like fascinated by that because I am an actor. I went to theater school. I was like thinking about playwriting for a long time. So I'm going to read that book alongside her plays and kind of just like see, compare them. And it feels like a different way to look at a book. And I don't really see people doing that on Bookstagram. So I'm excited.
Oh, I love that idea. That's so creative.
Thank you. I'm excited too. Oh
my gosh. Also, I don't know if I've ever actually like said this to you, but I am also like a former theater. Well, I'm former. You're actual. I'm a former theater kid. So.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Here's how I feel. Like once a theater kid, always a theater kid, right?
Exactly.
And I'll be honest, like I haven't been doing theater for the past 2 years because of the pandemic.
Right.
So I feel very out of touch, but once a theater person, always a theater person. You're in the club.
Thank you so much. It's such a special place in my heart when I like meet other theater people, because it is like, yeah, once a theater kid, always a theater kid. You have like that connection with them. So for sure.
Yeah. And you like understand things on like a different level. Like if you've ever taken like a movement class or something, you just understand like how weird theater people are. And that's a whole different brand of person. You've seen deep into my soul now that
oh my gosh.
I know this about you.
Like we were connected here at first, and then it's like the next level down of like, yes.
Yeah. If you've ever had to act like a cheetah, then like you're a soul sister. So
literally, oh my God. That's legitimately like the movement classes I took in college.
That's it. Yeah.
And I would like describe it to my non-theater friends. They're like, what the fuck is this?
Listen, I had a whole semester long class that taught us how to be the ocean and then the jungle and then the mountains. A whole semester.
I cannot with that.
Class. I mean, yeah, that was the most serious class I took. It was treated the most seriously. And like, it is.
It is.
Like, I still feel like it is. But
yeah, it's also just weird as fuck. Like serious and weird as fuck.
Seriously. Yep. But incredible. Now I know you're down. So.
Yeah, exactly. We can like act like oceans together. It'll be great.
Yep, yep, yep.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, this is a strange transition, but let's talk about Ace.
Oh my gosh, yay.
I'm so excited. Yes. Okay, so I know we've like exchanged messages and comments and stuff about Ace as we were reading, but yeah, I'm curious what your sort of initial thoughts are as you finished it.
Yeah. I love it. It's definitely going to be a favorite book of the year. I've been excited to read it, and I'm putting it off because it just felt like it was too perfect, and it was too perfect. I think what's so great about it is that I saw myself in it and still learned 10 times as much. And then at the same time, it was incredibly intersectional, which makes my heart sing.
Totally agree. I feel similarly where I like, even though I identify as allosexual, like I also still saw pieces of myself throughout the book. And I think that that is really special that Angela Chen was able to create this space that felt really welcoming and affirming to Ace folks in particular, but also like created a larger conversation around sexuality that was deeper than just kind of like siloed into the Ace experience. And like also just she expanded just even what I thought about the Ace experience in general. I was like, wow, like there's so much nuance here. I loved the way that she sort of organized things in a way that was super intersectional and talked about like the intersections of asexuality and disability and asexuality and racism and just like a lot of like really interesting, like complex things that she packed into this like pretty short book. I think it's like 210 to 250 maybe. Like it was just like a really, really tightly wound narrative that felt really personal because she kind of wove through like the memoir stuff and then also just kind of like the reporting. And I just loved it. I think it did so much similarly to what you said.
Well, right. And like incredibly accessible, so easy to read, so catching. And like you said, just it's about sexuality and sexual desire. And you like don't need to be ace to read it. In fact, like I think allosexuals, which are people who experience sexual desire, should be reading this, should be the main audience. Honestly, it's huge to understand this about yourself.
And also, like, I have a post coming out about this, I think on Sunday, but like, it also made me like question past relationships and past feelings that I had had in a way that I really wasn't expecting. And that was part of like, what really connected me to the book is that like, yeah, like, what is the difference between platonic and romantic love? And how did that show up? Am I bisexual or am I biromantic? Like, there was just so many like layers that I was like, ooh, I had not looked at my life with that lens before and that nuance before. And I found that to be really freeing to be able to like have the language to understand myself even better, you know?
Completely. So to like give a personal example, I identify as asexual, but then I'm also biromantic and I'm in a queer relationship. So I'm dating a woman and I am someone who has sex. And so like, there are so many layers to that and qualifiers, and she addresses each one and addresses how like, even though you are all of those things, and because of all of those things, you are still asexual. Just very inclusive and just made me feel like I was accepted as an ace person. And it sounds like to me, like you felt a similar way of like, oh, I'm able to understand myself better. You mentioned about maybe you're biromantic or like platonic relationships. And like, she talks about the queer platonic relationships. And I was like, when I read that, I was like, I've had so many of those and never realized it. I literally had a roommate in college and we were like, should we just live together forever? And we would cuddle and like all of these things, and it was never romantic. Mm. And yet it was like a relationship, and I never understood that until this. It was huge, mind-blowing, really.
I love that so much. And I love that resonated with you and that you connect that back to your experiences. And I love that, like, I think especially the queer platonic partnership portion of the book really spoke to me as well, because, and this is something that Angela mentions, that we just don't value those types of relationships that are not marriage and not sexual. And, you know, I think having the language of queer platonic partnership and having this ability to reimagine what partnership could look like and have it meet your needs is really freeing to people who might not feel like they can fit into sort of your typical like romantic and sexual relationship box, basically. It's just giving language and giving validation to like another type of experience.
And I think it's making me think about platonic relationships as well. And I want to call it that instead of a friendship, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is a relationship. There is an exchange of intimacy and emotions. Those are my best friends. Those are the people who in my life, like, there is no romantic part and there is no sexual part. And I assure you that like everyone has those friendships. If we were to start looking at them a different way, not in a way like not trying to make commitment there that isn't there, but if we just start viewing them in a different way and giving them the purpose they deserve, I think we're going to be more fulfilled even. I told my friend recently, I was like, you have to read this book because I think we're going to understand our friendship better because of it. Mm. And I can't wait for her to do it and for me to be like, I like love you as a platonic love. It means the world to me. And if it goes away, that's fine. But like, I want us to like acknowledge how much I love you.
No, it's so beautiful. And I posted about this in my stories, I think even yesterday, but The Cut has a podcast and this recent episode was called You Might Be in Love with Your Best Friend. And I was like, ooh, gotta click on it. Obviously it's like, that's like candy to me. And then I was listening, it explained the story of one of the reporters, you know, she like had a best friend move away during the pandemic and just like the real like sense of loss that she felt. You know, she's like, I don't feel romantic or sexual towards her, but like, again, like just how important this relationship was. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this totally like fits into our conversation about ace, blah, blah, blah. And then it's so funny because I was continuing to listen to the podcast and Angela Chen was a guest on it.
Of course. That is,
I was
so
like,
funny.
Oh my gosh. I was like, okay, yeah, they really covered their bases here. But like, we don't have that same language when it comes to friendship. I love that idea of like calling it a platonic relationship because like, that's what it is, right? Like, you know, it can be on that same level as a romantic relationship if you want it to be, and you can prioritize it in different ways. And like, you know, one of the things that came up in the podcast episode I was listening to from The Cut was like, it wouldn't be weird to move across the country to be with your romantic partner. But like, when I considered it, I thought that was weird, you know, or like, you know, she was like, that would be weird to do that for a friendship. But I was like, no, but we could, right? Like, we just need to kind of break those boxes, those boundaries that we have on relationships.
I completely agree. And I think that's even more important for people who are heterosexual, because they're even more like in a box, if that makes any sense. For me, like, I'm starting, you know, as an ace person, I'm starting to understand that these friendships mean the world to me. You as bisexual, you're understanding those friendships as well. But I think like a heterosexual relationship, you see it as like man, yes, woman, no. And it's so binary. It's so divided. But then what's worse than that, like one step worse, is the judgment that others will put on you. For me, I get it if a friend moves to live with a friend, but like my family wouldn't get it, or just people who have never experienced queerness or never experienced platonic relationships or platonic love. Like, they put so much judgment on it because the expectation is this amount of normativity of you marry, you have kids. And I think that's honestly what this all circles back to, is that amatonormativity is the issue. It's a stigma on everyone, even heterosexual people. The expectation for you to get married and have kids is so limiting. And if we could get past that as a society, people could be single their whole lives and be happy. That's something we need and want, right? We want everyone just to like have the choice, but we expect the classic American dream model to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that that is really a through line throughout the book, is that idea of like challenging norms and scripts when it comes to sexuality. So like including amatonormativity, which is like the expectation that everyone should prioritize finding romantic or sexual relationship and like make that kind of their primary relationship. And I'm curious if there's other like norms that were sort of addressed or scripts that were addressed in the book that kind of surprised you or kind of brought out any assumptions that you might have had.
Yeah, definitely. So definitely amatonormativity. I think compulsory sexuality was a really big part of it. Just assuming that everything is sexual. Even for me as an ace person, I assume that everything revolves around sex. So that was really big. And then probably the most mind-blowing thing for me was the realization about the feminist sexual liberation and how that is problematic within the feminist movement. I think Angela talked about within feminism, there is a stigma. Well, within the world, there is a stigma about women having sex, enjoying sex, being sexual. And so feminists really pushed to say, no, we can do what we want. And so there was this huge sexual awakening, sexual liberation. But then it created this expectation that if you were feminist, you had to be incredibly sexual. And that has been harmful in my own life, I realized, because there were so many times where I felt like I had to break through something when really there was nothing to break through. I'm just ace, but I felt like I just wasn't liberated, that I was being held down by the patriarchy and that I had to break through. And I have had so many bad sexual experiences because of it. So many toxic, terrible hookups because I felt like I just needed to be more sexual.
That really resonated with me. And I 100% agree. Compulsory sexuality is toxic and it creates toxic environments and toxic relationships, toxic hookups. Like, it is not healthy to assume that everyone should prioritize sex, right? And that chapter on sex positive feminism and how that relates to compulsory sexuality was so interesting to me too. And like I get it, right? Like, I get where it's coming from. I get the years and years and years, centuries of repression and oppression towards women. And I get wanting to be liberated from that. This is something I think I talked about in my episode with Angela, but like, that's not true choice, right? Like, if we are deciding things based on the fact that like, oh, we weren't able to do that before and now we are, that is not true freedom. And so we should also make room for people to make their own decisions about that. And I think this idea of like being feminist or being progressive and having that relate to like whether or not you have sex and the types of sex that you have is really pervasive in a way that I hadn't really like, I wasn't able to put into words until I read Ace and I was like, oh yeah, like it is like almost a badge of honor of a badge of progressivism to like, I don't know, be poly, like polyamorous or be into like threesomes or like whatever, like all of these like very sexually liberated things that do break sort of that like repressive script that we were forced into for so long, but like also creates boxes in itself. That dichotomy and that tension was really well put in Ace.
I completely agree. And I think I really, like, I needed sex positivity to figure out that I'm ace. Mm. But then, for instance, in college, there's just this expectation then that you're totally free and therefore should be able to be sexual. And it's this huge shift. I needed the sex positivity to get rid of that stigma that we talked about at the beginning, even of like, you have to wait, you have to wait. I needed that. And I needed that to figure out that I was queer as well, to figure out that I liked women romantically. And yet there's this pressure. There's this pressure from female friends then to like get your number up, basically.
Totally agree. One other thing I wanted to touch on that kind of exists throughout the book is just the use of language and like its power to either isolate or connect you to yourself or like to others. And just even the sort of experiences that Angela wove throughout the book of, you know, people who didn't know that they were ace until they like ran across a forum or something and like were like, oh, I didn't even know that this was a thing. I thought something was broken in me. And so it does have that power to connect, but it also, as we were talking about, has like the power to isolate. And I think a lot of that shows up in some of the intersectional chapters when she talks about like disability and asexuality and racism and asexuality, and people can feel like they don't fully belong to the disabled community. They don't fully belong to the ace community. And I'm wondering if like you've had those experiences yourself as an ace person, and just like, how does language show up in your identity as ace?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I'm actually like more than ace since I'm going through this right now with my mental illness. And I've been pretty open about this. Like, I want to identify as disabled because I am not able to do a lot of things because of my mental illness. I really struggle with a 40-hour work week because of my mental illness. And yet, like, I'm struggling with like that label of disability, and I'm like worried about appropriating it, right? Mm-hmm. But then it's funny because with asexuality, I did find discovering asexuality to be liberating for myself, to realize that, yeah, I'm not broken, like you said, and there are other people out there like me. And then that there are subcategories too, which I don't identify with, but like demisexual, gray sexual, all of these things that help you figure yourself out if that's what you want to do. And like for me, asexual is enough. I feel good with that word. I guess I get that like other people may struggle with that word or like further identifying themselves. Labels are just so hard. And I think once they become hard, they're not helpful. And so it's great in getting a community together. Yes, I agree. I think you're right. Within the disability community, the ace conversation is really difficult. And I'll share this about myself because I think this is something that other people I know have talked about having issues with. And I feel comfortable still identifying as ace, even though I'm on a medication that could definitely be the reason that I don't have a libido. And again, like we haven't talked about this, but there's a difference between sex drive and libido and sexual attraction. And so because I have no or very little libido, it's hard for me kind of to parse out if I'm lacking attraction or just libido, right? And that's been something I've really struggled with. And I've come to terms with the fact that, well, it doesn't really matter because I don't have that attraction. Maybe someday it'll change. I am actually working on getting off this medication. So who knows? Maybe in a year I won't identify as asexual. I doubt it. Like, I have a feeling I will still find this identity to be here, but it is hard feeling like maybe you are this way because of a medication or a disability. And that is, I think that's a really hard thing within this community, especially since asexuality is in the DSM-5. It's like sexual disorder or something like that. And to me, that's really difficult.
Yeah. And thank you so much for being like transparent and sharing that with me. And I think it's so hard to figure out for yourself. And then also I think the idea of being like a gold star ace who like maybe tries sex once, you know, Angela mm-hmm. talks about this in the book, doesn't like it and never experiences sexual attraction throughout their whole life. And that's like the perfect ace or whatever. And right. Angela lists all this criteria in the book or whatever, but that is also not everyone's experience, right? Like maybe that's some people's, but also like ace is an identity that is just as fluid as other identities. And I really appreciated that the book ACE really allowed that flexibility and said, you know, it doesn't make you any less ACE in this moment if you experience mm-hmm. sexual attraction later, right? You can also like not identify as ACE anymore. And that doesn't delegitimize your current experience. That was something that I really had to check my own bias on, because I was like, oh, I 100% was like, oh, ace people don't ever feel sexual attraction ever. And it's just so interesting to me that like, even as a sexuality professional, I was like, oh fuck, like I need to like check that. Right. And like, and, you know, I just share that because I'm like, you know, I'm sure other people have internalized that same myth, not even just about asexuality, but also about if you're gay, you just stay gay, right? Or like, you know, whatever. And like, that's also like not people's experience of queerness. And so I think allowing those lines to be blurred and allowing yourself to like experience what you're feeling and what you're experiencing and not worrying about the box that you need to like fit is so freeing, because then you can just experience what you're experiencing without being like, oh my God, okay, now I'm not ace. And so I think kind of mm-hmm. looping it all back to your experience and your example that you shared, like, yeah, like if you do end up getting off of that medication and then you don't identify as ace anymore, like, or you do have like sexual attraction, cool. Like, you know, but you were ace, right? Like you that identity that you have right now is still real and still valid. It just makes it even more complicated that, yeah, like the DSM-5 is really interesting. And I think there is like an exception for asexuality. Like it's like, mm-hmm. I forget what they call it. It's like low libido disorder or something like that. And then it's like, yeah. Oh, but also ace people, like there's an exception. And Angela really talks about like how like, okay, that's kind of helpful, but also like not really, because now it's like it's confusing everyone. So yeah. I think it is really complex.
Well, so something that she talks about in the book, and I find it so funny, a lot of things that I figured out on my own, she has put into like really great eloquent words. It's so affirming, right? To be like, oh, 16-year-old Katie knew this. Like 16-year-old Katie said those things, just not so well. And one of those things was like, you figure out you're asexual via negativa. Mm-hmm. You do it by realizing you're not other things. And I think that's why the labels are so difficult, because a lot of ace people also go through like 20 different labels before they figure it out. I know tons of people, including myself, who were like, well, maybe I'm gay, maybe I'm bi, maybe I'm this and that. And just like, maybe I have a sexual disorder. Like you go through so many things until you're like, oh, it's this thing that I know I'm this because I've never experienced it, but also I've never experienced it. So how do I know I never experienced it? So, but what I have found that the ace community that I have found myself in, and I am a little bit on the younger end, I have found that they are incredibly accepting. And the people I talk to voice their fears, and I really appreciate that. You know, people will be like, do you ever feel like other, like the allosexuals are right, that we will like find someone or we will figure it out? And it's like, sure, they might be, but like, what's your experience right now? And I don't like to like equate things to other things, because it like, there's so much nuance, but I almost want to equate this to like gender identity a little bit, because I haven't read this book yet, but Detransition Baby mm-hmm. just came out. And from what I understand, like someone's just like someone in the book is very fluid with their gender and figuring out their gender identity. And like, they relate to this at one point and this at another point. And I personally am going through something where like, I feel like a woman, but I also like feel like just like a person without the woman label, and like, but every day is different. Like, I think sexuality can be that way. I don't think it has to be a binary. And so I think we also need to let go of feeling like we have to label ourselves at every second, or let go of the feeling that we have to stick to a label forever. And I feel like ace people, I hope, and maybe this is just me, but I feel like ace people are doing that better. Maybe.
No, I think that's totally true. And yeah, I think the more narratives that we get in the space, the better, in my opinion. And so like you gave the example of detransition baby and gender identity. And like, I've seen some commentary before it even came out that like folks were worried that cis people would kind of like take it and like make it into something that is like really not validating for trans folks and non-binary folks. Right. And I think like that's a real fear, unfortunately, which is so shitty. But I also am like, the more narratives we get around sexuality and identity, the better, because then people can say, oh, I actually have had these feelings too. And now I have something to kind of compare my experience to and really have a more nuanced look at their own experience and their own identity and their own sexuality. And like, ultimately, I think that that is better for everyone, right? Is to have the language and to have the examples to pull from to then better describe your experience and also better, like feel better about your experience too. Like it is so validating to say, like, oh, I also experienced that. And I love that you have like an ace community that you can kind of like bring those concerns or bring those thoughts to and like just be validated for who you are.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I didn't have a community until like this year. So I've spent like 9 years of my life without an ace community. And it is so validating. You're right. And I think the more we see these stories, the more we meet these people, just like the better and more accepting we're going to be of ourselves and others.
I love it.
A warm hug moment.
A warm hug. It's so true. Well, yeah. And I'm wondering like, how can those who identify as allosexual, who experience sexual attraction, how can we better support the ace community and ace folks in our lives?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I'm going to start this off by saying that this is one of like the first times I'm being asked that. I was asked this a little while ago. There was like a rise in like the ace community in Bookstagram a bit recently because of some ace phobia. And that was the first time that I was like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm ace. I changed my bio to say I'm queer and ace. And like, and I've been starting to get questions like this because of that. And it's the first time I feel like I'm in this marginalized group and I finally understand this perspective of like, I don't want allosexuals to be perfect. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be perfect. I just need you to be aware that asexuality exists. I need you to understand how sexuality works. What I do need you to do though, everyone, is to challenge amatonormativity. I think that is the number one thing, because that's going to change the most people, is if we just stop expecting that you have to find your soulmate. Stop expecting that from people. I feel like that's the easiest next step, right? I don't feel like it's going to be easy for people to understand my sexuality, and I don't need you to understand my sexuality. That's too hard. That's too hard for anyone to get it. I just need you to like accept it and like stop putting pressure on other people.
That is so true. Like, we'd all be so much better if people could just like chill the F out and not assume things about other people. And then also like, if you do mess up, like acknowledge that and like repair the harm that you did. And like, it sounds so easy, but it's so hard for people. And I find that in my own anti-racism work in particular, where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be a white lady and fuck up like quite a bit. And I need to be open to that. And I need to listen and I need to do better. And it's the same kind of concept with allos. I think we live in a world, we're swimming in the water of compulsory sexuality and amatonormativity. Like, we're going to fuck up because that is the world that we have been raised in. That's the society we've been raised in. And so like, even if we can just like acknowledge that simple fact that like, this is not what's natural. And this is actually just completely like what society has ingrained in us, and that other folks don't fall into those categories, and like, that's fine. And that's a totally valid experience. That could, I think, change so, so much.
Right. Exactly. It's like, it's the system. The system is racist. The system is white supremacist. The system is ableist. And the system is amatonormative. Like, that's just what the system is. I just need you to know it. And then, like, and then we'll take some steps. And then we'll take some steps in the right direction. But yeah.
Totally. Was there anything else about ACE that you wanted to bring up that maybe we didn't touch on yet?
You know, I don't think so. I think we've really thoroughly combed through this. It is such an amazing book. I think if like you haven't read it, listeners, like do. Also, I'm sure you've read this, Caitlin, but Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski is like, oh, so good. I'm pretty sure Angela, I think she mentions it in this book, but like also really important in my journey of understanding my asexuality and understanding how I can be a better sex partner because of it, right? It also helped me understand my partner has vaginismus. And so like it helped me understand like her experience better. So honestly, get this book, get Come As You Are, get Burnout by the Nagoski sisters, and then like go have a nice weekend and come into my DMs. That's my homework for everyone.
You are speaking my language. Yeah, no, we got to do Come As You Are on the podcast because it is so formative to the way, like you said, like the way that I personally experience sexuality and also like the way I think about it in terms of other people. And Angela mentions this on my episode with her, but the Emily Nagoski is ace inclusive. And so I think that that is really powerful too, to have like, cause I think also in a lot of these conversations about sexuality and even sexuality professionals just assume that like people want to be having more sex. And like, that is not the case for some ace folks. And so like, even just acknowledging that and, but still saying there's a lot you can learn about your own body, your own sexuality, like that is really, really powerful. And so, yeah, I think that's a perfect weekend, honestly, to like have Come As You Are, have Ace, and then like maybe throw in Burnout too, if you're really feeling it. Like, yes.
And all of them good on audio too. So
good to know. Yeah. I'm like, that's a good place to end. Honestly, that's a good place to end. So fun, Katie. And like, thank you for like nerding out with me and being super like well-spoken and thoughtful about your own experiences and about the book. And yeah, just really appreciated the conversation.
Literally anytime, Caitlin. Thank you so much for having me on.